And welcome to That Horror Cast. I'm Mallory Smart.
And I'm Dmitry Samarov.
On today's episode, we'll be discussing the 1966 psychological horror movie, Seconds, directed by John Frankenheimer and starring Rock Hudson. In Seconds, middle-aged banker Arthur Hamilton is given the opportunity to start a completely new life when he receives a call from his old friend Charlie. The only problem is that Charlie is supposed to be dead. Charlie introduces him to a firm that will fake his death and create an entirely new look and life for him. What Arthur doesn't realize, though, is that once he even entertains the idea and visits the firm, there is no going back. Through blackmail and light persuasion, Arthur agrees to go through the procedure. After all, his current life had hit a dead end where his relationship with his daughter was non-existent, his wife had no affection for him, and he was in a job that was going nowhere. He was just a man going through the motions. After undergoing the procedure, Hamilton returns to the world in the form of artist Tony Wilson, played by Rock Hudson, an identity crafted for him by the company based off of drug-induced psychotherapy. He has a nice house in Malibu and a manservant, a company employee, who is there to assist him with the adjustment. But he finds that the life he had hoped for isn't quite what he expected, and asks the company to go through the process again, but with surprising results. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I woke up early too, so I was just like, message him? Yes. Like, I was either going to go back asleep and like fall, like wake up at 11, and then I was like, nah, don't want to get in the habit of doing that.
No, that wouldn't have worked. Yeah, I have to actually meet somebody at noon, so that's probably the other reason I got up, to make sure there was time.
You have other friends?
I have a friend visiting, an acquaintance from New Hampshire. She actually listens to the show sometimes, which is nice.
If you want to give her a shout out, then.
Yeah. Heather, yeah, we're meeting up at Jackalope.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually just drinking coffee that I got from Bridgeport, Sputnik.
Actually, oh, okay.
It's actually more like Pilsen, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Where'd you get it?
I'm trying to remember now. Valent and I like started just like going to a lot of coffee shops. And just, like, buying all their, like, local stuff because I wanted to try, like, not shitty mass-produced coffee.
But Sputnik, that coffee is sold in stores. I don't know. I don't think they have, like, their own coffee shop.
Yeah, they do.
They do?
Yeah, it's,
I didn't know they had
51st Street.
Oh, okay.
I just don't remember it. Yeah. Either way. I like trying new coffee. So it was funny when you made your comment about my amazing latte. I just did a French press, so I was able to just... That's why I was able to say 2 minutes, because I was like, I know it down to the second. Like, I know what
you
I'm
mean,
just gonna
You down. Mean the mocha caramel surprise?
Yeah. Can't time that one.
No, you would have made a mess, and you would have gotten all obsessive about the whipped cream looking right and stuff.
See, it wasn't whipped cream. It was the coffee that, like, kind of poured over and, like, started to dry on the mug. Like, there were very specific reasons. And when I listened back to that episode, I'm like, that was a good episode. But I'm like, can you hear me licking the side of my coffee mug?
That's great. You made, like, what's that called? What's the dessert with the caramel, with the sugar that's, it's a French dessert.
Dessert with the sugar? Wow.
No, the sugar that's, it's sort of like, it's like a, like an ice top, like, it becomes like, it crackles, there's a top. Oh, shit.
Are you talking like creme brulee?
Creme brulee, exactly, yes.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I knew how to make that. I've tried. I suck at it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, you've got to time everything correctly, you know, to make sugar do that.
God, it's actually so annoying now that you say creme brulee. I fucking love that.
Yeah, creme brulee is great.
So does Belen. But the issue, see, it comes down to the comparison thing. his mom is really good at making it. Like,
oh, yeah.
The woman does nothing but cook. Like, that is her life. She lives for it. Mom.
So you think Belette's going to leave you for his mom because she makes creme brulee better than you?
She makes everything better than me, but, like, that one is specifically, like, I can't do it. Like, I've tried. It just,
yeah.
A gelatinous mess.
Yeah. Yeah, desserts like that are super precise.
Yeah, just something like, this woman's been doing it since, like, she was a teenager, probably. Like, this woman knows how to cook. I've only just recently taken the thing up.
Well, maybe you know, before you're dead and gone, you'll perfect creme brulee. That'll be your big accomplishment.
That would be on your resume. I would put it on there.
She published 10 books, and she made creme brulee.
That would be really cool. That's the top achievement.
It's like your Academy Award.
I would be so damn proud of myself. Yes, put it on my gravestone. I feel like there are a lot of dumb things in my life that if I actually accomplish them, that I will be proud of.
Yeah.
So
what's what's another one like creme brulee that would make you that happy?
Okay, creme brulee, like, that just, like, jumps into my mind, but, like, there are just so many, like, dumb things. Like, she was able to read over 1,000 books or something.
Really? Oh, like, do you keep track?
Yeah, I mean, not
you have
very
a list?
Good track. I use Goodreads before it started getting all crazy.
Oh, to keep track, yeah. I have a friend, my friend Gil, who's got a book podcast, who has a list of every book he's ever read.
See, that's pretty badass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you go on his site, you can even see it. Like, there's a list of every book he's ever read.
Wait, what's the site?
Oh, man. He's got Chimera Obscura. He's got a couple of them. The podcast is called Virtual Memories. But I think...
Found it.
Yeah, VMS Pod. He's got a couple. He's got more than one website for a reason I don't understand. But yeah, so somewhere on that site, there's a list of every book he's ever read.
That is pretty amazing. Yeah, all the books he's read.
Yeah. Did you find it?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, he's a serious fucking reader.
Oof. I've read quite a few of these, and I'm just like, damn. Now new goals.
Yeah, so you're going to have to go over 1,000. He's probably over 1,000. I don't know. I don't know how many he's got, but...
I sometimes seriously, like, it's like the most dorky thing. I get depressed a little bit when I look at all the books that I want to read and then, like, the books that are currently coming out and then the ones that I don't even know are going to come out in the future. And it's like, you're going to die before you get to, like, read everything you want to read.
Hmm.
My mind works weirder than others. I also just woke up.
That's okay. No, I think that's not super uncommon, but like I've never understood those, like, that kind of goal, the quantity or whatever oriented goals like that.
It's not quite the number, it's more of the you want to be able to, like, see, I don't like calling it content, but you want to consume and take as much of it in as possible.
So it's like you're at the buffet and you want every trough to be empty by the time you leave.
Almost. Except I always was told I did buffets wrong. So.
Oh really? Yeah. Does anybody do buffets right? Buffets are kind of a nightmare, in a way. You know.
They really are. But as like the little kid, one that like would always be passed off as like an under 12 child for a very long time by my parents.
So you could get the kids rate, you know, for at the buffet.
Being short worked out for that one.
Yeah, they saved $5 or whatever.
But yeah, I always piss them off because I never got their money's worth.
Oh, why? How did you do it wrong though?
You know, like. The higher end stuff, like, damn it, Mailer, go for some meat or whatever. But I was like, but they have mac and cheese.
Oh, you would just get mac and cheese?
And then I'd be like, and there are desserts over there. Like, my mom would be like, stop filling up on the filler foods. And I'm just like, but I like the filler foods.
Mm. Well, that's the trick. Have you ever been to one of those Brazilian steakhouse places? You know, the kind where they carry around meat, like Fogo de Chão. places like that. So they carry, they go table to table, and you have a card like with if you want something on your plate or not, and they give you different cuts of meat. But there's also a salad bar and like endless dinner rolls, like these buttery dinner rolls. And those fucking dinner rolls are what kills you. Like if you keep eating those, they just expand in your stomach, and you then you get sick.
See, you know what I mean? I would do that. I love good rolls. Yeah.
Oh, they're delicious, but like they're like crack. But the thing is that you can eat those and not stop. But there's only so much meat you can actually put in your throat. You know, down your throat. You stop more naturally than with empty calories like dinner rolls, you know?
See, that's another big reason why I love Korean barbecue, but we only get to go occasionally because Boo always says you don't eat enough of the meat to make it worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different... That have we ever talked about, like, yeah, my... I think that all those, like, that and hot pot and stuff is a complete scam. They make you cook your own food. Like, it defeats the whole purpose of going to a restaurant.
God, that's so funny. We took his dad to
just
Iron
makes me
Age,
angry.
And that was his exact reaction.
It's so fucked up. It's like they tricked you. I know it's like a fun, like, group activity, but, like, I rarely go to restaurants with people. I go by myself all the time. But also, it's just like... The whole thing, one of the main things that I love about restaurants is that they cook and clean for you.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're just like, it's like they went shopping and plopped the shit in front of you and here you cook.
I just remember like we were not going to sell him on that.
That's bullshit.
He came to us saying, hey, do you want to do it? And we're like, bonding moment. Okay. Like we don't do that often. And when we got there, like he was like, what the hell is this in the middle of the table?
I know. It's fucked up.
For the first, like, 10 minutes when it took them to actually, like, bring the meat in, you know, when they put the stuff on the table that's filler food, and, Boo had to, like, elbow me into being, like, stop filling.
The appetizers and stuff, or, like...
Yeah, I dig the appetizers.
Well, it's called banchan. Yeah, the little plates of stuff, that's the... And Korean restaurants, that's the best. Like, little kimchi and little tofu bowls and, like...
Yes.
I love kimchi. Yeah.
So I could go there and just eat the appetizers, but...
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, though, when we were done eating, we sold the father on it. He was like, that was actually shockingly good. And I almost want to be, though, is because we cooked it, but...
Well, that's what I was just about to say. You cooked it, right? So he got the restaurant experience, but you didn't. You were the cook. he made you guys his bitch.
More specifically, Babette, because he was very picky about his like meat and how long you cook it. And I was just like, you know what? You're gonna be picky. You could turn the meat.
Yeah, there's a new kind of like hot pot restaurant that just opened in Bridgeport called Happy Lamb, and it's gigantic, and each one's got like one of those giant soup pots in the middle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go there, but I want to see if they have other options, because most of those places do have cooked options. Like you can forego the group, you know, scam activity and just get actual cooked food. So yeah, we have a Korean barbecue place too, but they will make you like bibimbap or like kimchi pancakes, you know, like the things that I really like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's options.
Always options. Like in this movie.
Sure, yeah, you can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
Or who you don't want to be. But you will have to make a choice, because once you make a choice, there's no going back.
Apparently.
And you learned when it's too late.
we don't learn that there's no going back until the end.
Yeah. That's how you feel at the end of the buffet after you've read all the books or whatever.
Yeah, like once you leave the buffet, it's not like they let you come back an hour later and be like, are you hungry again?
And start over, like remake your choices, yeah.
Exactly. Be like, I'll fill up better this time. I know where I'm going.
Yeah. I'll be curious to hear your intro, like recap of whatever, summary of what this movie is.
Ooh, huh.
Yeah,
I haven't thought of it yet.
Oh, you haven't done it yet. Okay, you do it afterwards, right?
Yeah, I do it afterwards.
After
like,
we door talk, yeah.
Take the mood a little bit off of what we did, or like if I felt like we didn't really cover the movie that much, I'm just like, I'll fill in the gaps so people know what we're actually talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think we'll probably talk about the movie this time.
It's a good movie, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, most of them are good movies, but some are just like, you know, that what we do in the shadows. Yeah, there's, like you said, there's not that much to talk about. It is what it is, you know.
And there, it doesn't make it a bad movie or anything. It's just one of those, like, and there it was. It was very fun.
Yeah. It doesn't really suggest any other, like, possibilities than what it is, you know. I mean, it's a funny spoof on reality shows with vampires and werewolves, you know.
Yeah,
that's about it. Whereas this is, I mean, you can put yourself in place of these characters pretty easily. I mean, who doesn't imagine like a different life than they had or have regrets, you know?
And also just so many aspects of the movie, because I don't know, I was watching it last night, and like immediately, because my mind was like all over the place, I was like, did this show rip that off? Did this movie rip that off? Like, just so much. I was like, a lot of shit ripped this off.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, it has some Twilight Zone vibes for sure. But yeah, there's a lot of that kind of, yeah, waking up in some other reality, kind of alternate universe things.
I mean, aspects, I was getting clearly The Game, Michael Douglas in there.
Oh, Jesus, that's funny. I went and tried to watch the Music Box showed that. Like,
I almost was going to go.
I walked out and it's so bad.
You'd never seen it before?
I saw it when it came out. I didn't like it. But
why'd you watch
it
again?
It was a member free screening. It was free. And I felt like seeing a movie. Plus, there was another movie I was going to see there later. It was just like Gordon Gekko goes west, and rich guy bored. Like, who cares? I don't know.
Yeah, we were going to go and we were going to take my niece. But then she seemed bored with the concept, and I was just like, I don't really give a shit. We're going to go out with our friends anyways. So we just went out with our friends.
So how did why did Seconds remind you of the what aspect of the
just the
game
unreality of it all? That's not even a word, but
you mean like all these people conspiring to control your experience, kind of thing?
Basically, it gave that kind of like how he for a very long time was very disoriented and wasn't quite sure what he was doing and who was in on it and who wasn't. I mean, when it came to like who like the company was who were actually paying attention to him and whether
that's
they
true.
Were like
yeah.
heavily dictating the terms of like how he was supposed to live. And like in the game, there was this woman who is actually part of the game that you don't find out later with Michael Douglas. And
who like, oh, does he have sex with some lady? I don't even remember. I didn't get
there's
that far.
There's a romantic interest. Yeah. I mean, it's been a minute since I've seen that. But same vibe here where we find out that the one
that his new love of his life is just an employee. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's just trying to guide him through the experience.
Yeah.
I like how she really did try and steer him away from getting drunk. She did her best.
Well, she was a good employee, you know.
She's like, you can ravage me. We're good.
And she's taking him to like this Bacchanalia festival, you know, like that whole wine orgy, you know, went to that he was really resistant to, but then he loved. She made him change for a minute at least.
Yeah, just for a little bit. I mean, I don't know. It then goes into the. Everything looks more entertaining and, like, fun, like, when you look at the youth's side. But then when you actually have to experience it, it's kind of weird, and it's not who you are because you weren't raised that way, and also you're just beyond that.
Yeah, that whole sequence is really interesting because, well, I mean, this movie came out in 1966, so this is, like, before the Summer of Love and stuff. But
it
sort of anticipates all the hip. This is before the hippies, you know, so it's sort of like still beatnik times, and Mostly it's like the 50s kind of conformity. And really, I mean, that's sort of like part of his whole conflict or quandary, is that like he's this buttoned up middle-aged man who is like unhappy with his life and he wants to be free. Like, so his fantasy is to be an artist, you know, but he doesn't even know what that is. So then like this company shows him what that is, and it turns out it's not what he wants and he can't do it.
And that's why at the end he's so determined to be like, okay, can I get the procedure again? But I want to actually have choice.
To go become somebody else. Yeah. Yeah. Were there any other movies or shows that it, like, you thought that it reminded you of?
I definitely got just Eternal Sunshine and the Spotless Mind gave me aspects of that, with like the company and obviously the ability to alter mind, and then also Get Out, just the whole procedure aspect.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of movies and shows that have this kind of like where you go in.
I was also saying that Mad Men was heavily influenced off of this. Like, that's Don Draper character.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, that, like, towards the end, I forget which season it was that Don goes, like, he goes to California. Season. Was it the last season when he goes to California and he starts, like, on this, like, vision quest journey or whatever? Yeah. Because
that's totally to California a few times.
That's totally this movie, you know? Down to, like, this kind of guy, this kind of, like, you know, prototypically handsome guy, which Rock Hudson obviously was, you know? Mm-hmm. And John Hamm is, you know?
And, like, yeah, that is almost the exact last episode of Mad Men, now that I think about it, because he just is, like, stuck randomly at this, like, not a yoga retreat, but whatever you called that in the 60s or
70s. Some kind of ashram or something, yeah.
And they force him to experience it and everything, but his epiphany there isn't actually, I want to be and live like this. It's a, oh, damn, this makes me think of an amazing idea for a commercial.
Right. Yeah, he's still just an ad man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where, yeah, there's this, that sad scene where, like, he runs away and he goes back and sees his former wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's found out that she's totally, like, moved on, you know, and gotten rid of all his shit.
I mean, the company was selling him on that idea anyways. Like, prior to blackmailing him into it.
Yeah. No, but it's one of these things where, yeah, it's...
Wow, I'm now thinking about it. In a Mad Men, similar thing happened. Everyone was just like, we don't actually need you.
Yeah,
except
yeah.
for the company he worked for. Yeah, I really feel like the creator of that show definitely watched this quite a few times.
Yeah, I don't know if it's considered a classic, but it's definitely got a cult following, this movie. You know, there's a lot of people that love this movie. People that make stuff.
I was reading that the director Frankenheimer, he was saying that this was one of the odd movies that actually went from being a critical failure to a cult classic. Randomly.
Well, he said that a couple of times. He also made The Manchurian Candidate, which was basically disappeared because of the Kennedy assassination, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie that wasn't disappeared for decades, you know? It was revived in the 80s.
There are quite a few good ones. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was actually really funny. I was just, like, going to throw this out there because I thought it was interesting that Frankenheimer considers this to be part of a paranoia trilogy, the last movie in it, versus Manchurian Candidate. And obviously the last movie you picked was part of, like, the end of a thematic trilogy, the apartment trilogy, Roman Polanski. Mm. Did you do that on purpose, or...?
No. I don't remember how I what determined why this movie came up in my head, because I had some other ideas for the next movie. I really honestly can't remember how I chose this movie. I maybe I just
I
hadn't
think you just
watched
came across it
in
a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it flickered across the consciousness somehow. Interestingly, I mean, like in the 60s, there's a bunch of these movies with people altering their faces one way or another. There's a really unsettling Japanese movie called The Face of Another, which also came out in 1966. And it's about this guy whose face was disfigured in an accident. And then he goes to a company, like, and they give him this new face, a much younger face, kind of like this. And he goes and has an affair with his wife as this other character to prove that she's unfaithful, you know?
That sounds like a very fascinating movie.
Yeah, check that out, The Face of Another.
Adding it to my list.
Yeah, and then, you know, in 1960, there was another movie that I keep wanting to do for the show is Eyes Without a Face.
I've heard of that one.
It's a French movie where the scientist keeps trying to give his daughter a new face, and it keeps failing. It's another creepy movie. So there's something in there in the 60s about, like, changing your identity, you know? And, I mean, I guess leading up to the Summer of Love and the hippie revolution and everything else, you know?
See, like,
that came in the later 60s.
All the movies you mentioned, if they're American, I would have said, like, they could be, like, Cold War related, like, where they're afraid of, like, sleeper agents or whatever. But these
sure.
are other foreign films, so I don't think that would have been some theme that would have affected them. So.
I mean, there was more of that in the Manchurian Candidate, obviously.
Yeah,
agents and double agents, and who's actually in control and stuff. Yeah, this one doesn't have anything specifically geopolitical in it. It's more of a personal battle. I mean, you know.
Do you wish really... that you can do that, Dimitri? Do you want to get that surgery?
To become Rock Hudson? No.
Not personally, but.
The funny thing is that what are you saying, Mallory? You saying I'm ugly? Oh, geez.
No, I'm saying that he had a very shitty life, actually.
I've had a shitty life.
No, Rock Hudson has had a shitty life.
Oh, the real Rock Hudson. You
real
mean?
Rock
well,
Hudson.
Yeah, it was a mixed bag. I mean, you know, he was a very successful actor, but he couldn't live as what he was.
Yeah, and also he himself had to physically become the ideal actor. I mean, I think all his teeth were capped and everything. And yeah, like
were they?
He was like heavily transformed into what his agents wanted him to be.
Well, yeah, he's kind of a little bit like he was like the male Marilyn Monroe, like he was assembled from parts, you know?
Basically, which actually makes him the perfect actor for this film.
Yes. Yeah, there's definitely commentary online about interesting thinking about this movie in relation to Rock Hudson's life, how he was playing a role always, you know?
Now the question is, was he a deep enough person to have chosen this film based on that? Or was that just then, like, the studio would be like, we want you? Was that that era still, or...?
I think this may be late enough that the directors got like it's sort of like the beginning of directors choosing their own rather than the studios controlling everything. I'm not sure. I didn't read up about the sort of like that part of the history of this movie.
I didn't either. I was hoping you would know.
No. But yeah, this doesn't seem like straight up kind of like studio product, you know, this movie. It seems a little bit more personal. Or
I will say, I think a studio obviously wouldn't be as into like the actual cinematography and everything of it. I mean, it was very disoriented. There were some really wild angles and everything going on.
And yeah, torturing their beautiful, like, you know, eye candy product, you know.
Exactly.
No, I mean this has got to be one of his best roles, you know. Yeah, because he often does star in these kind of fluffy romantic films, you know.
Yeah, that's what surprised me is to see him in a serious, like, as a serious person.
Yeah, he's got a few of these. I mean, he had a long filmography, but yeah.
He's been around the block a few times, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't want to. I don't actually know too much about Rock Hudson, but I the assumption that he was dumb because he's pretty, you know, like that's probably not fair.
And I think a lot of people make that assumption, obviously, because he was very heavily manipulated by the studio. Because clearly, we know in retrospect that he was gay, but that obviously was a thing that wouldn't have like affected his choices or whatever. But the fact that he allowed his like body to be transformed and everything so much, whereas
Yeah.
women, it seemed like, yeah, that's par for the course, but guys, I
That was
wasn't
more
sure if,
standard for, of course, it's more
yeah,
standard for women in that era, probably
only
still now.
reason I
Yeah.
know really anything about Rock Hudson is my mom is obsessed with that film era.
Oh
So,
yeah.
yeah, I know more about that shit.
What's her favorite from that time?
Oh
Does
my
she have a
God.
favorite?
Yeah, I'm really trying to think. I mean, she loved Doris Day movies more than
Oh,
anything.
really?
That woman needs to like have that like vibe going on, but so she comes across a lot of movies like that. I don't know what channels she watches that gets her there, but yeah.
Yeah, Rock Hudson is in some Doris Day movies.
Yeah, so yeah, I definitely get him and some others, Cary Grant, stuff like that. I love knowing that they all had different names, actually.
Sure. Well, yeah, that's definitely a studio thing where they give them a name that. Yeah, I don't know what Rock Hudson's what was Rock Hudson's name? We can find that out.
I
Did
remember
you
it
look it up?
was. Oh, it's because they actually had a character based on him somewhat in that Ryan Murphy Hollywood miniseries. His name was Roy. I don't remember his last name, but he's actually from Illinois.
Roy Harold Shearer Jr. Yeah,
Oh.
from Winnetka, Illinois. Yeah, died at 59 of AIDS. Yeah.
My favorite, though, is Cary Grant's real name. It's Archibald.
Yeah, Archie. Yeah, he was like he was like a circus performer practically.
Yeah,
Like a
his name's
carn he's like a carny.
Archibald Leach.
Yeah.
Wow.
Archie Leach, yeah.
I
Yeah,
guess
they
for
well
his
yeah.
roles, it wouldn't have been all right to have that name.
Yeah, they made up names for all the big stars. Some of them made up their own, but a lot of them were given.
Yeah, I don't know who's in. Like, was that like Agent Studios? Who came up with that vibe? Like, you're no longer this. We're giving you a better name.
Well, they had a vision of what would look good in the credits at the beginning, you know. Yeah, you went to New Trier High School.
See, he's a local somewhat.
Oh, weird. I didn't know. Charlton Heston and Anne Margaret also went to New Trier. I had no idea.
A lot of
That's
them
strange.
came out, bumfuck Midwesterners stumbled over to the West Coast.
Right. Oh boy. So who, aside from like your regrets at the buffet and wanting to read thousands of books, who would you want to be transformed into in
I
your
think
fantasy?
it's
Who
one
would
of
you
those
be?
things where I was thinking about it a lot. Especially because like they were kind of talking about it in the movie, but I never was someone who was trying to conform, so I don't actually want to be anyone else.
So you always wanted to just be yourself?
Yeah, basically. I mean, they kept like talking about like why this didn't stick and everything with him, and it's because it wasn't who he actually was, and the fantasy was different. Whereas I just kind of go with what I actually want to do.
Well, the problem, and this is, I mean, because it's a story and it's not real life, they made it kind of simple as his ex-wife told, well, his widow told him, you know, he was this guy that was just always drifting off somewhere else. He wasn't really embodied in his own life. He
But
was
like,
dreaming of something else. So
I know
once
what they're talking about is they were talking about ambition, and the it worked most with people who didn't have ambition. Yeah.
And you do have ambition, you would say?
I mean, I think so. I think more than, you know, like
to read 1,000 books and make creme brulee. And
I don't know. Like, just be the best writer, creator I can be, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be, like, penniless in the street, and I'd still be writing, so.
So, on the gray zone, it'll say Mallory Shakespeare died here, or whatever.
Catch me, like, on my broken typewriter, just being like, we'll write for a cup of coffee. Thank you for sending me that link, by the way.
About the typewriter guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that guy's going to be very busy. He seems like he's busy already, but like after that big...
We're looking into that, yeah.
Big profile, probably take 5 years to get him to fix your typewriter.
What's so annoying is that we already know what the problem is. It's just the string, but...
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we just can't do it ourselves because we don't know where to get that item.
What, you mean the ribbon?
Ribbon. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what you officially call it, the slide string or whatever that pulls it back.
Oh, yeah.
We used a guitar string for a while and that kind of worked. But.
Oh, interesting. No. Well, you have to take it to that guy, I guess.
I know. I would be like, hey, this is a quick job. Please just put the string in.
Well, you could pay him more for a rush. Like, he did have a rush job. Like, I went to his website. There's a rush job thing, but, like, he'll charge you more.
Who's, like, in that much of a hurry to get a typewriter? It almost defeats, like, the reason for having a typewriter, almost, in my opinion.
Well, I bet a lot of his customers are, like set decorators or, like, people that are in...
Yeah, but it doesn't need to work.
Or interior... What?
But it doesn't need to work if it's, like, kind of, like... part of like decor or something.
He does those too. He advertises that too, like where he restores like the look of something without fixing the actual function.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. He does it all. Like he's like 23. He's a kid.
That's fucking awesome. I like that. It was a really cool. Yeah. Very cool to see that.
It's definitely one of those happy, nice human interest stories. That's what they used to call them. Human interest, like to contrast with the disasters on the front page, you know.
I would say, do they really do fun human interest stories anymore? Like just nice, hey, look at this cool thing that happened. As
well, every now and again, like
going to hell.
Well, yeah, because the rest of it's so bleak. Yeah,
like we need the contrast there. It'd be like, and then there's this really cool person. It's like good for them.
Yeah, or like you know, like the local hero who rescued the puppy from. Or the cat from the tree or whatever, you know?
See, I love those stories. It helps balance it out. Because I definitely do, like, the doom scrolling a little bit.
Well, how can you not? There's almost nothing. It's almost exclusively doom. And
so,
this,
like,
yeah.
If someone then comes out with an article of lost dog, but dog found them 1,000 miles away, I'm just like, okay, I'll read about that.
That's the funny thing is the other interesting thing to think about in this movie is whether he actually wanted any of this to happen at all because he's sort of tricked into it. It's his buddy, you know. It's that aspect is sort of like classic pyramid scheme.
I will say, what is that scheme? It's not Ponzi. It's pyramid.
Yeah, that's. Ponzi, it's the
same
thing.
Okay.
Ponzi is a pyramid scheme, yeah. Where in order for it to work, you always need new recruits to pay the early ones, you know,
to
keep it going.
Quite clear as to why he failed, because he couldn't come up with someone else to give to them.
Yeah, that's why they had to brain him at the end.
I know, and I like how they're like, you're either being insanely stubborn or like you have no friends.
Right. And the answer, sadly, is that he has no friends. I think he really was racking his brain to come up with somebody, maybe. You know, unless he's such a humanitarian is that he doesn't want the cycle to continue. But I don't know if that guy is that good a guy.
No, I don't think he's that good a guy because he, towards the end, even was like, all right, we're ready to go. Like, he still had hope that he could go through the procedure again.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants a do-over, but you don't get a do-over even in this like nightmare fantasy scenario. But
Well,
yeah,
with his
the
friend
question,
though, was
yeah.
do you think the friend Charlie, when he
I
was
think
taken out, was he then like had the
I th
Rock Hudson fate, or do you think he got a second chance?
No, I think he was be I think he was being killed. I think he was being put down. It was like dogs being put down. You know what I mean?
God
I don't think
damn.
any of them were getting a second chance.
You just like destroyed my dog happiness, I told you earlier.
Yeah, sorry. Well, that's the other thing is like, so this is about like some fantasy coming true, but not at any point in this movie do you feel anything good will happen to any of these people. You know, the whole time it's paranoia and like kind of like horrible fever dream the whole time, right?
Like, even when he gets the life that he supposedly wanted, he can't actually assimilate with one good goddamn.
No, and his like creepy asshole butler keeps pushing him to have this dinner party, and by the time he has it, it's a fucking disaster. When it's revealed that everybody's just an employee or like one of the other people, what do they call them? Not changeling,
Reborns.
reborns. Yeah. So it's just like society of like, it's sort of like a leper colony in a way, you know.
It's a little frustrating because I thought his lady friend was a reborn until that like sudden.
It's even worse.
I
Yeah, she's
know.
the
At first, I just thought like, "Wow, you are one eccentric ass fucking reborn. Like you've embraced it." Whereas, like, then you realize, like, you know, how she took him to that wild wine
Yeah,
hangout.
the Bacchanalia, the Feast of Bacchus, yeah. The
That was a
wine
company
festival.
person who was just like, come on, let's do it. Like, you wish that it was just like a reborn person who really dug the idea of it and like was living her best life and was trying to teach him how to do it. And it's like, oh, he is still being manipulated by the company.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I think there's a clue of something wrong from the start, like when he happens upon her on the beach, and at first, you know, he says hello, and she like gives him this terrified look, like this, like don't come near me look, until she switches on. Oh yeah, this is my job now, kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, it definitely was one of those, okay, low, hurry up, let's do that again, start over. And then
Yeah,
she
it's
just
like,
like
oh
clicks.
shit, I wasn't ready for my role to begin yet.
Yeah, it's like she was just very reserved and chill on the beach. And then like the minute like she was like, oh, okay, let's go for a walk. And like she snapped into Manic Pixie Dream Girl really fast.
Yeah, it was all false, and you could sense that it was false, but you didn't know until later why, what about it was false, like everything.
I would also like to throw out here in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Jim Carrey comes across Kate Winslet on a beach. She's the manic pixie dream girl. He's a reserved guy who doesn't know how to live life.
Yeah.
So,
I've
just
told you about my
callbacks to
experience with
that.
that movie, right?
I don't know if I recall, but I think I told you that's one of the few movies that'll make me cry.
Well, that movie was coming out when I was going through my divorce.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So, yeah, I had to wait, and I waited like a year or something to watch that movie because I was literally going through that. I was being erased like Jim Carrey in my real life. Could not too soon, as the kids say, you know.
I don't know if we say too soon anymore, but then I'm
Well,
not
the
one of the
kids used to say,
kids.
yeah.
I ceased to be part of that group.
I mean, the kids 20, 30 years ago. I wasn't a kid 20 years ago.
Like, I have no idea what the kids say anymore. I actually have to
Yeah.
ask occasionally and be
Yeah,
like, what do you say?
do they still say Gucci, or is Gucci over?
I don't know because my nieces are now slowly phasing out of that age as well.
Oh yeah, you're going to be out of touch even secondhand. You're not going to know any of the new terms and expressions.
And, you know, I'm just gonna have to eventually be like a really older person who befriends a weird young person. I'll be creepy or whatever.
Oh well, yeah. Speaking of young people, so I had a Swiftie moment yesterday. I had a
I think
so I
it's
was te
impossible to not have a Swiftie moment during these last couple of weeks, but go for it.
apparently no no well, I was teaching my drawing class, and this one girl in the class. So I play music for them in the class while they're drawing. I just put on music. I bring a Bluetooth speaker and play music. And on a break, she asks me if I like Taylor Swift. And this girl, so check it, she's such a Swiftie that her parents offered her a car for her quinceañera, and she opted out, and she waited 5 years and got front row tickets to Taylor Swift.
God damn.
That's some fandom, you know?
And that's playing the long game there, too.
I know. It's amazing. And I just told her, like, I have no opinion on Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is not my reality. When she was telling me about how...
She just, like, approached you and was like, are you a Taylor Swift fan? Because nothing about you shouts Swiftie.
I think she was just trying to make small talk, but like because I was playing music, and she recommended that I listen to Folklore based on the music because all her reference points were Taylor Swift.
That is my favorite album of hers. So
no, it was sweet. But also we were talking about how now like all these new people are into football suddenly because of Taylor Swift, and how all these. She's telling me about all this. Then she asked what sign I was because there's all this astrology stuff, like something about
that.
The 13th. So the Super Bowl is on the 13th, and it's the 13th something. Like, so she has to appear at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because Taylor Swift's favorite number is 13.
Right. That's what I found out. I didn't know that. So I think the world will end on the Super Bowl this year is where we're going with this.
Wow, this is some straight-up 2012 situation, isn't it?
What's 2012?
You remember back in 2012 when we were like, we're all like, the world's going to end and everything because of the whole Mayan thing?
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I forgot about that. And well, before that, we had the year 2000.
See, I was too young at that point to really know why.
In the year 2000?
I was watching something recently, too, and I don't even remember what it was, but they were talking about, oh, my God, what was it that they called it in 2000 when they thought, like, the world was going to end? There was an actual term they called it.
Yeah, I've never.
It has something to do with tech. I know that.
Yeah, because
Y2K.
Y2K. Yeah, they thought the computers wouldn't be able to flip to 2000. That they were all there's something about the zeros and ones was not. They were afraid it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I remember watching. I don't remember what I was watching because I very casually am not paying attention, as we've discussed before. But I heard the Y2K thing, and I remember having to pause and ask Bennett, be like, you're techie. What were they afraid was actually going to happen? And he basically gave me the same thing you just told me.
Yeah.
So no one really knows what we thought was going to happen. But
they somehow, for some technical reason, they thought that the computers wouldn't be able to function with the year 2000 as the input, you know? That it would like zero it out or something, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a techie clearly, but
even the techie couldn't answer it, so you're in good company.
But yeah, the idea that like whatever it was that he was as John Randolph before he became Rock Hudson, like what he was dreaming of becoming, we never know what his dream was. I mean, we learn later that he. You know, he did watercolors. That's probably why, like, they input his fantasy as becoming a writer, as a artist, I mean. But we don't ever really know what he wanted to be. He just didn't want to be what he was, you know?
I think that's where I came off with the whole passion thing, where I think it doesn't work with people who, like, have a passion, because we wouldn't have any need for it.
Oh, to transform?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, works for no, but like, but the old guy didn't have a passion either, really.
Yeah, that does go into the whole identity issue, doesn't it? He was a guy like going through a massive existential crisis that just got worse when he tried to go like the other way.
Well, yeah, it's a real nightmare because if found out like all his dreams come true, but like he doesn't know what the dreams are. What he found out is he actually doesn't have a dream.
Like they're playing back the recording and everything. Like, oh, we got that. Oh, sorry, the red ball wasn't what your dream was. Our bad.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the nightmare is there's like nothing inside, you know, like when we're talking about at the beginning, like all these goals, like you were talking about, like reading 1,000 books or whatever, but like this guy, not only is he unhappy in his life, he doesn't know what he wants. He can't even imagine it because he's just like this kind of normie. He's a banker, right? Like, and he just leads this.
Wasn't his ambition like, I'm gonna be the manager one day or some shit?
Right. And then he's scammed into this scheme by his buddy.
Total entrapment.
Yeah, he keeps and it, and he keeps it a secret from his wife, but like in retrospect, why? You know, like what? I mean, they're clearly, yeah, they're not like super happy with each other, but as she tells him when he visits later.
I mean, we could see that in the beginning, like just through like all of his like sweating through each day, and then like you even realize like shit, they don't even sleep in the same bed. And I know that that was done a lot, like in like movies back then, where it's like, oh, we didn't do double beds, but obviously that was a thing as we came to learn. Like it was
Well,
fine.
she said, like, yeah, he'd been dead for years before they found him in that hotel room.
I mean, what was it like that? Like when like he was trying to describe like what his life was, like when they were trying to talk him into it, because he was like, well, you know, I have a daughter, we write occasionally, and just like then with the wife, like we're kind of cool with each other, like we live around each other, almost like they had like a truce, like we have an agreement, we'll all live in the same place,
Yeah,
but we don't want to have any contact with each other.
quiet lives of quiet desperation. I forget where that quiet desperation comes from, but like everybody's unhappy, but just going along because they think that's what life is.
It's so depressing because there are so many people who do that.
Oh yeah, no, but even more, and that's a theme in a lot of movies and books and stuff. But like the more depressing conclusion of this movie is that. Even like having all your wishes, like you get the genie in the bottle and he gives you grants you your wish and you don't even know what you want, really. Or like you want the wrong thing, you know, you make the wrong choice and you can't go back.
Well, and what's shitty is he made the wrong choice, and then he found out that you can't go back to make the right choice.
I don't think, say they let him. Okay, let's pretend they gave him a second chance. What the fuck would he pick? He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know himself. Do you really think on a second chance he would have done any better? I don't.
No.
That's the really dark, the real darkness of this movie is not just the what's happening, but like that there's no way out at all.
And it just made you wonder, like, because obviously at the cocktail party, I couldn't say ratio between like company men and reborns, where you just want to be like, was there like a good, decent amount of like successes in this like game that they're playing?
No, yeah,
Or
we never
had they
find
never
out.
like perfected it, the
Yeah.
procedure?
Yeah, we never they leave it, you know, ominously open-ended. We don't find out, and even, you know, towards the end when the old man who started the company comes to visit him before his lobotomy or whatever, before his checking out, you know, he says like he started out with good intentions and, you know,
I love that guy.
And it's kind of like he basically is telling him like, you know, you can't make an omelet without breaking some eggs. That's basically the moral of the story, you know, like, well, you know, like I'm you know, did my best.
I came in here with the best intentions. We
Yeah.
haven't perfected it yet.
Yeah. We're still working, but we really thought you'd be the one. And
Yeah,
even like
like
down to
at the
the
end,
surgeon,
the
like,
surgeon.
yeah, you're my best work, and then he's got to destroy him. It's like
The
he made
surgeon
this
had a
be
passion.
yeah, he made this beautiful creme brulee and then he's got to like throw it in the trash.
Yeah. I'm so fascinated as to what like the procedure actually would have been like. It was good, obviously, because...
Oh, actually, physically? Yeah. How you would turn John Randolph into Rock Hudson?
Yeah, because like, it can't just be as simple as, like, oh, we did a brain transplant. Because obviously they said that there were, like, facial scars and everything. It's like...
Yeah, when we first see Rock Hudson, he's like sort of like Frankenstein's monster, you know.
It's got the really poorly done scars. Obviously, maybe they sucked at makeup.
The stitching. Yeah, the stitches with the thread and stuff. Yeah,
and his hair is a little gray in the beginning.
Yeah, they haven't colored it yet. Yeah,
but damn, he's got a young man's body.
Yeah, he's a different like. I don't know. I would wager to guess that Rock Hudson might be probably taller than John Randolph, you know, like.
Probably.
And it's a totally different physique. Yeah. It's not a schlubby middle-aged man, you know.
But he never even embraced that body. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying that, like, oh my God, if you got the perfect body, you would immediately want to flash that shit. Mm-hmm. But he was still a very reserved guy, as we saw in the crazy wine situation.
Well,
because people were stripping down and everything, and even he was just like, the fuck.
That's the part that the company didn't perfect, is that they couldn't change the insides, you know? It's plastic surgery, but they're not changing the inside.
That's why I wondered, consciousness. Like,
yeah.
Why they like were trying to force the cocktail party, because he didn't like want to like see anyone. And I almost wonder, like, was that their way of testing if he could actually keep, like, his personality, like, or if he could fully transform?
Well, you know, like in, I don't know what all the terms are, but, like, in different kind of, like, psychotherapy and stuff, there's these behavioral things, you know, where you change somebody's, like, mind or whatever through actions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was kind of that. They were trying to get him through practice, just like the way they did. They made him, they gave him all these paintings, you know, they're already done, and then they made him start painting.
I also like the service where they're like, we will occasionally swap out paintings.
Sure, yeah, it's full service. Yeah,
it's a good service.
Well, that's the other thing, is like, what would this thing cost? Like, aside from like having to lure another person in, like, How much would you charge?
$30,000. That number was like tossed out at some point, but
oh,
then
was
they
it?
Started
oh, I
to
missed
go
it.
Through like his will and everything, and where his money was going to be left. And I was just like, okay, they're probably taking a good chunk of that too.
Well, how would they hide that from the widow, though?
How the hell did they get his identity into Rock Hudson?
Yeah. No, but, you know, well, you were wondering earlier how they would do the surgery, so I'm wondering, I'm keeping that going.
Just
like,
keeping
okay,
speculation.
Yeah, if this is actually reality, like, how would you do this? Well, nowadays, you know, the nowadays version of that is people living online, their fantasy identities are virtual, you know what I mean?
And you do have that very weird segment of society who are obsessed not just with plastic surgery, but almost wanting to look identical to, like, a celebrity or whatever, like, where they go through a full overhaul.
Yeah, those, like, kind of anime faces that they make.
Yeah.
You know, like, with that kind of, like, airbrushed look. And they do surgeries to make themselves look like those cartoons. There are those people walking around now.
Those people yet, because I know I couldn't prevent myself from laughing. Like, it's not a mean person thing, but you know, in your mind, you probably just be like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some people with some extreme makeup for sure, and I can't tell, like, how much of it is
real or not.
How much is surgery and stuff? Because, you know, like, there's a lot of people that'll get, like, eyebrows and stuff tattooed on, or like, there's stuff that's tattooed on.
I've seen the eyebrow one.
I've
seen quite a few. This was like the worst one. If you recall, in the high hipster era, some people
what year would you peg as the high hipster
era? I'll say 2011, 2012.
Okay.
There were people who were getting the mustache thing on their finger. And what? Also, yeah, they would tattoo a mustache on, like, their index finger.
Really?
So then they could hold it up to, like, their nose and lip and everything and be like, look, I got a mustache. Like, it's fucking weird as hell. Yeah.
No, I missed out on that. I guess I was never a hipster.
I would say go to Wicker Park, but I don't know where the hipsters roll these days. And also, did they all get them removed? Because I don't see anyone with them anymore. I hope they got them removed.
But yeah.
I think a finger is probably a very like painful place to get a tattoo.
Yeah, there's a lot of bone. So, yeah, I don't have any on my fingers, so I can't tell you. But I can tell you that like I have some on my ribs, and that hurt like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm not ready to sign up for that, no.
You're not that committed?
No, not that committed. Although, like, you know, you've seen I have on my ankles.
Yeah.
But I'll admit I was pretty out of it both times. So if it was painful, I don't remember.
Out of it on what?
Well, the first time I was pretty drunk. And then the other time I was drunk and high on Xanax and smoked a lot of weed.
Yeah.
I had to go to a literary festival, and I was very nervous. And I was like, you know what's going to make this better? A Twin Peaks tattoo.
And did it? Did it make it better?
It made it a much more amusing situation.
See, then you had a story you could tell people at the literary festival?
Yeah, it definitely was one of those things where I could be like, oh, yeah, this? I just ran out and got this a couple hours ago.
It's always a bad idea, though, to be drunk when you get tattooed because then it thins your blood and you bleed more.
They always say that, but I've never listened to that rule at all.
I've never once been drunk when I got a tattoo, but
that's probably for the best, yeah.
But I also, I mean, like I wanted to be present for I wanted to feel the experience. But.
Interesting. I felt the experience with my last one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess that doesn't bother me. But those are wrist tattoos, so I don't know if like. That's a more painless area? Because you see people with wrist tattoos a lot.
Yeah. No, but yeah, you see less with fingers or like, you know, like face tattoos and stuff. That's less.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty intense face tattoos, so yeah.
Yeah. But it's a lot less common.
But yeah, Rock Hudson, he was flawless. Those stitches went away, no scars, nothing.
And still so moody and so miserable, so unhappy.
Proof that just because you fixed yourself on the outside doesn't mean that you fixed yourself on the inside.
Right, yeah, I mean, yeah, the movie has a very simple moral, but, like, it's just the execution and, how you get there that's sort of, like, the magic of it, you know?
As I said, I love the cinematography. I love the disorientation for such a long time. Like, that was great.
Well, yeah, starting with the title sequence, everything's all fucking distorted, you know?
And then just, like, the really weird, like, close-ups on, like, just, like, where you get really into his face and everything, and then you're just, like, kind of scrambled about getting lost in the crowd occasionally. And then you can see, like, you're just getting perspective shots, and, yeah, it was cool.
There's a lot of shots where, like, Spike Lee does this a lot in his movies where, like, there's a person in the front and he's moving through, like, on a steady cam through a room, you know, like, as if he's, like, on roller skates or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget what that shot is called, but, like, Spike Lee does that shot a lot in his movies.
Yeah, it's not a tracking shot. It's,
I don't know if it's steady cam or not, but, like, there is a name for it, that specific shot. But it gives this feeling of unreality, like where the person is separated from his environment, you know?
Yeah, you get the disassociated feeling.
Yeah, which is like, yeah, half this movie. But the thing is...
Spike Lee, I'm imagining really quickly this one scene in Inside Man. I don't know, probably not like his better movies at all, but he does have a scene with that, like with Denzel Washington.
I think Inside Man is one of his best movies.
Really?
It's one of my favorites, yeah.
I love watching it over and over, but like so many people are like, it's his shittiest movie. And it's like, I like it.
Oh, no. I think it's one of his best. I think he does the best when he does just genre movies like that. Like it's a crime movie. That and like Summer of Sam I love too.
Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, though, like, I haven't watched enough Spike Lee movies to be like, oh, this is, like, high ranking or whatever.
I think I've seen most. I think I've seen most of them. Yeah. He's got some real howlers. Chirac is horrible. What a horrible movie.
I'm sorry. I just can't. That's like a running joke I have with my friends, is I have a friend who was in that movie.
Yeah. I know some people
that's what
in that
got
movie,
them
yeah.
their SAG card.
Yeah.
And that their like claim to fame was like, oh, I was in the background right here and I got a few words. I have watched that movie so many times just to be like, I don't see you.
Oh, no. You just watch it just to prove them wrong, that they got cut out of the movie or whatever?
It's like this one friend, we don't really keep him around. He just kind of keeps like coming in and out of our lives. We're like, how do you keep finding us? But we just like to make fun of that. And
he just randomly, he just shows up places that you are?
Showed up at the release party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was Where the fuck is he doing here?
At the Hungry Brain?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that it was a public event and it was advertised, so
it was,
I guess
but
he could have.
It was almost like, wow, who are you here for?
Oh. Oh, you weren't like, you weren't
apparently
talking to him or anything?
No, not really. He was someone, he actually is the person who's responsible for Belent and I meeting each other, but.
And now,
and
now you've rejected and scorned him? Jeez.
I like to say the story that I met Belent at a party, and he wasn't invited to the party, and neither was his friend.
They crashed the party?
Yeah. That's just how that guy is. He would just show up places.
That's just his MO. That's what he does, huh?
He crashed my birthday party, and that's how I met him.
Oh.
And then, a couple months later, he crashed the other party, and it was just one of those, how do you keep showing up places? But he brought his very foreign friend, Belent, that he would not say in an American way at all.
No.
He really tried to, emphasize the foreign aspect.
Yeah.
So when he said his name, I was just like, where is this Belent Vedat Marad?
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, people hate this, but, it drives me crazy when people, and I say this as a fucking foreigner, when people slip into their native tongue to say the words, their name or whatever, it just drives me crazy. You say it in the fucking American accent, and yes, it's wrong. I know,
I don't think his friend knew how to properly pronounce his name because Boo was very quiet back then.
Oh, okay.
Boo and I were actually dating a little bit, and I actually finally had to be like,
What's your name?
You
don't even know.
we're staying at a hostel, and
my boyfriend, what's his face?
I called him Boo because, again, I was very drunk when I met him, and I was just like, who the fuck
you
is this
still
guy?
Call him Boo.
Yeah. I'm the one who coined it.
Yeah.
And now he's Boo to almost everyone. Even the friend that introduced us calls him Boo because I refused to learn how to say his name because I was very disoriented.
Now he's Hubby Boo.
Exactly. It's such an easier, and I think he prefers it too because he hates correcting people on how to pronounce his name because he also just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Where he's like, just say what you will.
Yeah, my lifelong curse is having to correct the spelling of how people spell my name. That's what I've had to do most of my life. But since
Does
I got to this country,
you,
kind of.
Hmm.
I mean, when it's written out, it bothers me. Yeah. Unless the only time it doesn't bother me is if, I'm in a, a to-go restaurant situation. When you have to give some, whatever, Starbucks. Because in that situation, it's just so that the person can read it for themselves to call it out. Then I don't care. But, if they're – it's wrong in, 70 to 80% of – my correspondence, in email and stuff, people get it wrong. People get it wrong all the fucking time.
You would be shocked that people still manage to get Mallory wrong, and that's a pretty damn common name I've
heard. How do they spell it? Do they spell it like gallery? Or
I've gotten that, and I've also done one L.
One L? Yeah.
The IE at the end as well.
Oh, like Valerie? Okay.
Yeah. So many different.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a less common name. It's not the most common. It's not unique, but it's less common than.
It's like unique a enough where in my family, I get to be like, I got the cool name.
Oh.
Because everyone else is very basic and everything, like, you know, Mike, Melissa, Matt, Megan.
Yeah, because they're all the M's. Yeah.
They just obviously ran out by the time I came.
The last M. So see, you wouldn't pull any of that Rock Hudson shit. You wouldn't even change your name.
Nah,
much less your face or your lifestyle or whatever.
I won't change my last name ever. Like, I remember it was not like a big conversation because like Boo never expected it.
Oh, for marriage, yeah.
But like, I was just like, it's not going to happen. And he was like, neither your sisters change your last name. Like,
oh, no.
Because I said, I was just like, it's because our last name is Smart, and that fucking rules. You don't give up that cool last name.
No, but you could have that cool alliteration going. Mallory Murad?
I didn't want to be Eminem.
You could be Mallory Smart Murad.
No, that was one. Mallory Murad Smart. Bandied about a
MMS.
Little bit.
MSM.
But I have to say, the only people... like, who didn't give a fuck about what my last name was going to be were me and Boo. Like, we were just, yeah. Like, just...
Everybody had an idea that what it should be?
Up until, like, the day we got married, my parents were still just like, so who do... like, what do we do on the address when we mail you stuff? And I was like, just do the normal shit. And they're like, what if it's for you and Boo? And I was just like, just mail it to me. Like... I don't understand this is an issue, but whatever.
Well, the other thing is that, of course, you have your name as your professional name because you publish. You know, that's the other issue of it, you know?
It's one of those things,
you wouldn't
want to
change it for that, if nothing else, right? Your brand. You don't want to tarnish your brand, Mallory.
You almost wonder if that's, like, the reason. Because, like, you Google my name. I really don't think suddenly people are going to be like Mallory Murad. Like, you're not going to find that. Or Smart Murad. Because I know one writer who does the hyphen. So, like, she does her last name that she was known for, but then she got married. And
oh, and she added it?
Yeah,
she added the hyphen. Oh, okay. Some people have the hyphen from childhood because that's the way their parents did it. You know what I mean?
See, I would never do that to my kids.
I grew up with some of those. But, like, as far as, the professional name thing, like, yeah, it comes up. Speaking of transformation, so, my friend Lucy, you know, whose memoir, like, you're going to publish a review of that I wrote. I remember talking to her and being very concerned going through that because she had a professional name that was out there for decades that was different, that was about to change.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, all the books have been changed to Lucy from Luke. Yeah, pretty much.
See, that does sound like a huge, yeah.
It's a huge issue. And for a while, like, she's talking about how, like, it could be, like, Samuel Clemens to Mark Twain, you know, like, have this kind of alter ego kind of thing to keep Luke's aunt.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately decided that she couldn't. Have it separate. It had to be one person, you know?
No, I definitely vibe that.
That's agree. A lot. That gets very complicated, you know? And I'm sure it would get people to question, you know, your commitment or if you're just playing a role, you know? Whereas what Lucy has done is not, it's not play acting.
No.
It's a whole life change.
But speaking of, I don't think I ever considered that aspect, like the branding as much.
No, it just occurred to me like that is another thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. I like my sister's bitter reason for doing it. She just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that it was her who made it and was better than them. So she needed to keep the last name.
Oh, you mean money-wise or like
success?
Yeah.
Oh, she wanted everyone to say like, "Oh, that's so and so."
Oh, because she would like made more money than her husband or something.
And all them. She's a very arrogant, I need to be top dog person. So,
no.
Well, we have several of those in this family. So,
I've my parents have some old friends where the husband changed his name to his wife's when they got married. It happens.
It was actually slightly a funny conversation, but Boo almost considered taking the Smart name because it was like whoever has the cooler last name.
Valent Smart.
But at the end of the day, I was just like, your parents will kill you if you do this. Like, just, you're already marrying a white girl.
Valent Smart seems like a secret agent name. It seems phony.
Yeah, like those secret agents that, like, they have to teach, like, you know, to not do those weird American situations. Like, you know, like, there's a whole, like, training for CIA secret agents, whatever, where they have to learn, like, you can't lean or, like, put your elbows up too much or else you seem too American.
Sure, all the physical, cultural, the way people hold themselves in different cultures is different.
Mm-hmm. We're a lot of leaners here.
You know, don't shake people's left hand, you know.
I didn't know that rule. It just never occurred to me to try it.
Yeah.
Now I'm just going to try it. See who's receptive.
It depends what part of the world you do it in. You might offend some people.
I know that I stuck out a lot because, like, you know, in America everyone's just like, smile more, and I fucking hate it when people say that, but, like, as I travel to other countries, I was just like, fuck you all, now everybody knows I'm American. Like, if you just let me be my neutral stuff, yeah, or I'll smile and nod and be like, hey, and it's like, oh, they don't do that here.
No, a lot of places they don't,
where it's like, I could just be me and just ignore the fuck out of you and not have, like, a fake cheery disposition. Like, I could be me in this country. Maybe I'll move to that country.
Country where they look at you and just know that you know how to make creme brulee and you've read 1,000 books.
Where, like, they don't even need to know, but it's like, why the fuck would I care about you?
Yeah, that's, people are just more secure in their identity. I don't know.
Yeah, that obviously. I don't know if such a place. Into this.
I don't know if such a place actually exists. It's a fantasy. Speaking it's of fantasies,
fantasy. Yeah. And he was never going to be secure in his identity.
No, that's why this is like this existential nightmare, because there is no happy outcome. There never was going to be one in this movie. You're, like, just trapped in this nightmare forever. What? No matter, every choice he makes is the wrong choice, because his life is just wrong.
I like when in the cocktail party he was getting drunk, and I still very firmly believe that that was the company testing him to be like, okay, you can be not supervised, you're trusted.
Well, that's, and he failed because he started talking about his former identity.
I know, I'll be like, oh, I went to Harvard. No, it's kidding. I went to Harvard, and now I'm not a Harvard alumni because I'm an artist.
Yeah, he totally failed the test. He failed all the tests, yeah.
But I read that Rock Hudson actually decided to get drunk for that scene.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And it's like, oh, I see it now. I got it. He went method.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was definitely the full-on method, peak method times. 60s. That's where all the actors were doing that stuff.
I'd be like, oh, okay, give me some of the real alcohol. I could do it.
What's my motivation? What's my backstory? Yeah. But it's fast. Yeah. I think we mentioned this. I've talked about this before. A couple of years ago, I reviewed a book for the reader about the history of the method. It's really fascinating.
Ooh.
It's really good. And how it traveled from Russia to America and stuff.
I am very fascinated. I don't think we have spoken about that.
It's a really good book. You should pick it up. It's Isaac somebody is the writer. It's published a couple
History
years
of the
ago.
Method?
Mm-hmm. Might just be called The Method or something like that. Yeah, it's really good. Really good book.
Are Isaac. Looking up to do?
Yeah.
Isaac Butler?
Yes, that book, yeah. The Method, How the 20th Century Learned to Act. Yeah. Isaac, yeah, highly recommend that book. It's very good. But, where all these acting actors and acting theater people got stuck in America because of the Soviet like crackdown on individual expression. You know, they really couldn't go back, and that's what. And they populated all of like American theater and American like any prominent actor you could think of, basically. You know, from the 40s to the 60s basically originates, most of them are from the Method one way or another,
mm-hmm.
one or another strand of the Method. But each person in each school, like there's splinter sects all the way down. Everybody did it different,
mm-hmm.
because it's not really, because you can't codify it completely because you're drawing from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like everybody's starting their own religion. You know what I mean? Like the thing that Daniel Day-Lewis does, like where he completely disappears. So that, but that's a version of the Method, but it's totally his own, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotta appreciate those actors who really go for it.
But, you know, there's something to be, and all of it started, you know, so Stanislavski started it, and it was a reaction to the classic French theater where all you do is like put on a costume, you know? And then you become the person. It's all external, you know? And then he went completely internal and it kind of overdid it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
It just went into the well one too many times. And you find out, you know, there may not be anything in there. That's the other trouble. Kind of like in this movie, the idea of this movie that,
yeah, that really wasn't, like, he just had his memories, which are the most bland white man memories ever.
I know. But he was still homesick for them. Like he basically wanted to...
Do you like to golf and everything? Like, the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
I think that one was a test as well. To be like, yeah, we remember you liked golfing in your previous life. We're going to ask you again. Do you still like golfing?
Yeah, there's this great movie with, I think it's a Gregory Peck. Called The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit. I don't know if you ever saw this movie.
Sounds familiar.
I think it's still 50s, but it's in color. And it's about one of these guys, kind of like what he used to be, like the John Randolph character, who lived on Long Island and he'd come into Manhattan to this job. But he was traumatized from World War II and he never got over it, but he pushed it all under, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he did everything like... He fit in like everybody else on the train looked exactly the same. They had the same suit and everything. And he was just chafing under all this conformity, you know? And traumatized and not having any tools to deal with it. And he ends up having a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the pressure. And that's a lot of probably what the underlying themes of something like this movie is. These people like that kind of on the surface get everything they want and are not satisfied, and this all leads to the, you know, the 60s revolution, kind of, you know, all the upheaval later in the decade.
Indeed. No, that's what made this film so great. In retrospect, though, I don't know if it's a retrospectively amazing film. I just wonder, like, if people actually were able to get that same vibe when it came out.
No, they probably just read it as like a fantasy horror movie. They probably thought it was like a pulp, like the way that people like read like pulp novels. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or go to horror movies. Like it's like an amusement park ride or something. But there's nothing deeper in it. But yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's buried in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of serious, like, fundamental dissatisfactions with yourself and your place in society and the society, you know?
I mean, it's one of those things where, like, only the artist really clearly understood. Like, Frankenheimer, we've seen, has a history of doing stuff like this. Like, he had that vibe. Did everybody catch that vibe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he had a sort of an interesting career. He wasn't like a full-on auteur, you know, like he wasn't like Godard or something. But, and he was within the studio system, and he worked. He made all kinds of different kind of standard kind of studio movies, and he worked late. Like he had to take over for The Island of Dr. Moreau with Marlon Brando after the original director went crazy and like disappeared into the jungle. You know that story?
Yes.
That what's his name? Richard Stanley, I think his name was. He just made a comeback. He made that Color Out of Space movie, which is really good, mm-hmm. with Nicolas Cage. But Val Kilmer and Brando like bullied and tormented him until he just went crazy and disappeared into the jungle. And Frankenheimer took over that movie. The movie's a disaster. But like, you know, so he was like a. He was a good company man in a way, Frankenheimer, you know, but then sometimes he would make these crazy movies like this or Manchurian Candidate, you know.
I'm sure Manchurian Candidate like gave them kind of like more trust in like, oh, okay, you could do this. Like if he was pitching this after that, because if that's all part of the same vibe that he was doing like as a quote unquote trilogy that we discuss retroactively.
What was the second in the trilogy? You said... what was in between them? I missed.
You know, it's actually a movie I'd never heard of, but it's the same thing like in the Apartment trilogy where the second movie was one I didn't give a fuck about either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me look it up.
No, but like the Apartment trilogy, all three are great.
Yeah, but I'd never heard of the one. 7 Days in May.
Oh, yeah. Seven. That's a... That's the nuclear crisis movie, right?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, let me. I know I've seen. Yeah, it's a nuclear paranoia. It's a Cold War thing. Yeah, which I mean, Manchurian Candidate is also, but yeah.
So there does have to be some kind of Cold War ties with this movie.
Yeah. But like the first Manchurian Candidate and 7 Days in May are more
vocal and out there.
Well, they're more about geopolitical issues, whereas this one is totally personal. Like, you know, the war is going on the inside. You know, it's not really about competing societies. It's just competing impulses inside of a person. You know.
Yeah, competing identities or lack thereof.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, obviously, I don't know, feeling like you're not able to control your actual destiny, I guess that would be a very huge theme as well. He had no control. You said yourself that he really didn't get much choice in, one, even going through the procedure and then how it was going to come out.
Yeah. I mean, not only was he didn't know what he wanted, he was manipulated into this choice, you know.
He didn't even know what he was going into.
No, he just kept getting these mysterious phone calls, and something made him follow up and do that, you know, and go along, go down the rabbit hole, you know.
There was like one last phone call where like Charlie was like, "Really, what else do you have left?" or something.
Mm-hmm.
That really is just like the main theme throughout it. Even to like the very end, what do you really have?
Yeah, you know what? What's a movie that took on that theme later on? Actually, that I just thought of is that movie, The Lobster. Do you ever see The Lobster?
Everyone tells me to watch that one.
Oh, go see that one. Yeah, it's where like it's Colin Farrell like in his last chance at love, and like if he doesn't make a love match, he gets turned into an animal.
Is that what that movie's about?
Okay. Yeah. It's really creepy. It's creepy and funny, yeah.
See, I
it's
usually just one. Get, like, a description of, like, this is the vibe of it. And
no,
like,
no.
No, I need details.
Go check out that movie. It's fucked up. well, cool. Yeah, I think
we got this.
Yeah, we more or less covered it. Do you have an idea for a next movie for us?
I do. It's an Australian horror movie that came out in 2023. Everyone keeps recommending it to me. So I don't know if it's going to be good or not. And I think it'd be fun because I like jumping into movies that I haven't seen. It's called Talk to Me.
talk to me.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I know any. Talk to me. I don't know if I know anything about. Let's see. What's talk to me? I don't think I know. Talk to me. 2022 supernatural horror movie.
Yeah, I was asking a lot of people because I'm going
Who recommended it?
Several people. It kind of like threw me because I was asking some people, like, can you give me like cool occult-like recommendations of movies? Everyone kept like giving me the standards, but then like every now and then, like, I'd get people being like, no, oh, Talk to Me was really great too. I just saw this. And I was like,
cool. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I want to check it out.